Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 1st chapter, text 48. Sorry, text 47. Name of this chapter, the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. Word by word with translation. Vairanubandha. Vairanubandha tivrena.
Vairanubandha tivrena.
Vairanubandha tivrena. Vairanubandha tivrena.
Vairanubandha tivrena.
Dayanena chuta satmatam.
Dayanena
chuta satmatam. Dayanena chuta satmatam. Nito punahare parswam. Nito punahare parswam. Jagmatur Vishnu parsado. Jagmatur Vishnu parsado. Jagmatur Vishnu parsado. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jai and Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. Purport. Whatever their position, certainly Jai and Vijay always thought of Krishna. Therefore, at the end of the Mosala Lila, these two associates of the Lord returned to Krishna. There is no difference between Krishna's body and Narayan's body. Therefore, although they visibly entered the body of Krishna, they actually re-entered Vaikuntha Loka as the doorkeepers of Lord Vishnu. Through Lord Krishna's body, they returned to Vaikuntha, although they seem to have attained Sayuja Mukti in Krishna's body. Please read. So all of you have been hearing for, 47 verses about the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone, and in particular about the activities of Jai and Vijay, who by now you must know were cursed. It was a wonderful curse, because although it seemed in one way to be painful or detrimental because they had such an exalted position. And we understand from the Bhagavad Gita that for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So certainly as the gatekeepers for the Supreme Lord Vishnu, it was an honorable position. It's not like they were the chokidars, to somebody's material mansion, but they were actually the two gatekeepers through which the entrance to Vaikuntha, whoever was entering, these were the first people they had to come across. And as such, they actually had quite a good deal of power. In fact, it was pointed out in the previous verse that they, as the first cousins of Lord Krishna, said they were practically on equal footing with him. And we can understand that they didn't get that birth or that position incidentally, I think that Lord Krishna would not leave such an important position up to fate or to chance. He had his own desire in the picture. So they were there by his desire. And similarly, by his desire, they were vanquished. Although it seemed, it seemed at the time maybe kind of harsh or unnecessary, because we understand also from Bhagavad Gita that, whatever action one performs in this life, there's also going to be some distraction, some disturbance. Things won't always be perfect. So even if, they're the doorkeeper, so they're kind of halfway in, halfway out of Vaikuntha. It means there's some fallibility to be expected in the activities of anyone in this world. So they made it seems like a small mistake, denying the Kumara's entrance. And in return, when they were cursed, they were given a choice, and they took that choice to take the three births, and because they figured that would be, you know, the quicker way back. So they didn't protest. This, you know, we can see also Maharaj Prickett, when he was cursed, he didn't protest. He accepted that this is the will of the Lord. This is for my own purification, if you will. It is actually the Lord's mercy on me. So a devotee always has that mood. And even if something untoward comes their way, or something that appears to be undesirable, then they accept, or we should accept, well, this is coming from the Lord for my benefit, one way or the other. Although sometimes, you know, it doesn't appear that way. You know, we're protesting. We're not getting what we think we want the way we want it. And after all, I'm a devotee, so therefore what I want is service to Krishna, and I'm trying to serve Krishna. Why is this impediment coming my way? So, you know, we can have that kind of mindset sometimes. But actually, we can see through these wonderful examples that the most advantageous mindset is to accept everything as coming from the Supreme Lord personally for our improvement, for our purification, and for our spiritual advancement. And sometimes the Lord will take an advanced devotee and put that devotee in a difficult situation or a situation that appears very contrary to their position. Why should they be experiencing this problem? But the underlying feature is the Lord also likes to glorify his devotees. When the devotee does something that's very pleasing to the Supreme Lord, he likes to reveal that to the public at large. And sometimes, you know, if he just simply pats the person on the head, oh, you know, good boy, good girl, whatever, people may not take notice. In fact, they could even get a little jealous, you know, why is that person getting that attention? But he puts the devotee in some kind of a contrary situation where the person may have to struggle somewhat. In this case, they had to struggle quite a bit, and they were vilified because they were playing the role of demons. But by not objecting and by fulfilling their role very wonderfully, they were returned to their original position, as was promised. We saw the same how Arjuna, he was put into difficulty, and he fulfilled that difficulty, and as a result, he was glorified. Saw how Prahlad Maharaj will be reading. This is of course like the prelude to the whole entire episode of Hiranyakasipu and Sri Prahlad Maharaj. So that could, you know, always be in the back of the mind. If he was such a pure devotee, how could he have undergone such strenuous torture and hardships? And of course, in the sequel, in the grand finale, when the Lord appears out of the pillar in such an astounding form and rips apart his father right in front of his eyes, you know, garlands himself with the entrails of his father, you know, to a materialistic person, this would just be completely ghastly, but to a devotee, it was the most wonderful event. And Prahlad Maharaj was completely fulfilled with spiritual ecstasy at that time and feeling so satisfied that when the Lord requested of him, now you may take any boon, anything you want, there was absolutely nothing that he wanted. And with all sincerity, he could say that, you know. Sometimes we're asked, you know, do you want something? Do you want more? Is there something I can do for you? And we'll say no. But, you know, in the back of our mind, we're thinking, well, actually, I need this, I'd like that, but, well, we'll say no because we assume that will look better, you know, or at least that's the correct answer. You know, but Prahlad Maharaj, he was saying no because he was completely fulfilled with, you know, with spiritual ecstasy. And having the personal darshan of the Lord, just, you know, he had the front seat darshan, was just so overwhelmingly gratified. He couldn't imagine anything more, nothing that he needed. But still, when he was pressed, he asked, of course, in a very selfless way, another quality of a devotee, very selfless, for the benediction that his father be saved. So just like Dhruva Maharaj, when he was given the opportunity to board the Vaikuntha airplane, you know, he refused to board unless his mother, who had given him the full instructions that had taken him on the path of transcendence. So without, he said, how could I leave my mother behind? So this is the wonderful mood of a devotee, that they always accept the difficulties obtained as for their benefit. And even when they're getting rewarded, they are not after that reward. They are not taking it for themselves, but they would rather give it over to others. Another interesting point here that was made in this verse was how they had entered in the body of Krishna, because it was Krishna who personally had killed these final associates in their third, you know, and they said in their third verse. So Krishna had personally killed them with his disc. And he said, it said by doing this, he destroyed whatever sinful reactions were left on them because of the burst of the because of the curse of the brahmanas. So they could see that Sishupal had re-entered Vaikuntha, you know, and everybody had noticed this, but it happened through entering the body of the Lord. So generally when one enters into the body of the Supreme Lord, then they attain Suyuja Mukti. But this isn't so preferable for a devotee. So, and even though they appeared to have done that, actually they had re-entered Vaikuntha. So I was thinking on how that had happened. And in one way, they were the former gatekeepers now being restored to their position. And by entering into the Lord's body, and then subsequently through the Lord's body, they re-entered into Vaikuntha. In a way, the Lord was acting as their gatekeeper, that they were finishing up their, you know, their curse, where they had to come into the material world and, you know, in these role of demons. So they enter into the Lord's body, but instead of Suyuja Mukti, they pass through and they regain their original position as the gatekeepers to Vaikuntha. A very wonderful pastime. And gives us a little glimpse into the wonderful mercy the Lord extends to his devotees. And in the unique way, the Lord extends himself to save his devotees. So one could say, well, if, you know, here's the Lord's devotees, they made a little mistake, they got this heavy curse. Why did they have to go through these three traumas, traumatic experiences? But the result was that they were wonderfully glorified, and different devotees through each one of these incidents were also glorified. Ultimately, Lord Krishna himself showed just his wonderful prowess and his wonderful intelligence in each time protecting his devotees. I wanted to take the time, if you don't mind, to read something to you. I had some notes with me, and I was going through the notes this morning to find one thing, and I came across something that is kind of interesting. It was from November or October, I'll tell you in a moment, 1970. And it's November 8th, actually, 1970, so it's like 27 years ago. And it's from the Times Weekly, published in Bombay, Delhi, and Ahmedabad. And it was an article that I had sent to my mother. And in this article, it proclaims, very big, maybe you can't see it too well, but it says, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, the first part. But it says, it's what's of interest here is because as I read it, you'll understand. So the magic of Krishna's name has touched millions of young Americans groping for a way out of the morass of materialism. A group of these idealists is now in this country, meaning India, to gain firsthand experience of the land of Lord Krishna's birth. So now the author of the article is giving a little like picture of the scene. Low clouds threaten a downpour. It has already begun to drizzle, and many of the 10,000 strong crowd on Bombay's Chowpatty Beach were on their feet. For five consecutive nights, they had listened to heady spiritual oratory, and now the All India session of the Bharat Sadhu Samaj was clearly heading for a tame end. In other words, it looked like it would fizzle out because the rain was coming. An elderly sadhu went up to the mic and pleaded with the audience to stay put. Om Tat Sat, may the blessings of Narayan be with you. Are we going to run away because of the rain? Besides, this is October and the monsoon has already left Bombay. He consulted briefly the pocket watch dangling from his waist and announced a half-hour program of Sankirtan by, quoting, our brothers and sisters from across the sea. It was indeed a memorable farewell to the rains. A group of 20 Americans, members of the Hare Krishna delegation, took over the dais. The air was filled with the beatings of mridangas, the clash of cymbals, and the music of the Maha Mantra. Swaying from side to side, their tufts of hair tossing in the breeze, they chanted, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The falterers, those who were about to leave, returned to their seats. The drizzle had now become a welcomed accompaniment to the devotional music. The huge crowd joined in the chanting. Even the policemen succumbed to the Hare Krishna magic. There was also some in the press enclosure who were not immune to the atmosphere. One graying reporter, whom I had always regarded as a particularly unsentimental person, said to me in an emotion-choked voice, do you realize what is happening? Very soon, Hinduism is going to sweep the West. The Hare Krishna movement will compensate for all our loss at the hands of padres through the centuries. But A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the Indian founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, and his American disciples repeatedly told me that during their brief stay in Bombay, theirs is not strictly a Hindu movement. Krishna, they explained, is above all religion. He is the universal teacher, the supreme man, the personification of the absolute truth. It took 2 days and scores of telephone calls to arrange a meeting with the Swami. The Swami, the Bombay businessman in whose house they were staying, readily agreed to let me in, but when I climbed the winding wooden steps to his ancient second-floor apartment on Malabar Hill, I had to contend with the white sadhus who seemed at first reluctant to speak. However, Gurudas Adhikari, a 29-year-old New Yorker and the chief sishya, offered to tell me everything about ISKCON, but he made it plain that a meeting with his divine grace could not be taken for granted. We went to the kitchen and sat down on the floor. An American girl in a white sari was slicing brinjal. Another disciple was making laddus. Let us talk, said Adhikari. The Sankirtan movement has to go out for public chanting, because in those days, every day, we went out for Harinam. He sounded rather businesslike for a holy man. What is your name, Swamiji? I asked. I'm not a Swami, he replied. As for my name, I told you, it is Gurudas Adhikari. I mean your real name, the name your parents gave you. Gurudas replies, let us not get lost in trivialities, he said. We in ISKCON have no past. Only the future matters, the progress toward Godhead, that is Krishna. Adhikari anticipated most of my questions and answered them with aplomb of a man who has successfully survived much press grilling. Krishna consciousness, he explained, is a practical solution for man's present predicament. Why have thousands of American youths joined the movement? Many of them have been hippies, but drugs and free love only provide a temporary escape from misery. What America and the world needs is bhakti ras. We are no fools, Adhikari said, warming up. If we can give up the past and live in harmony in small groups, why can't the whole of America do this? Why can't the world? Will it be all right to describe your movement as a protest against the materialism of the West, I asked. Adhikari smiled for the first time and said, there is nothing new in your diagnosis. Krishna consciousness is the only antidote to this ills of my country and of yours too. But how can the chanting of Krishna's name solve the stupendous problems of the human race, I asked. What is ISKCON's solution for India's poverty? Adhikari laid his large hand on my shoulder. He had the build of a star baseball player and said, who says India is poor? How can the land in which the great master was born be poor? You are far, far richer than America. A country which is the home of Lord Krishna has nothing to be ashamed of. It is, in fact, bountifully rich. His eyes were half closed. There was a blissful smile on his face. I wished to pursue my cross-examination, but Adhikari seemed to be momentarily wrapped in his own mystic thoughts. Passing the string of tulsi through his fingers, he chanted, Hare Krishna, in sheer ecstasy. A woman disciple announced that aarti was being performed. Adhikari led me into an incense-filled room. A dozen Americans had prostrated themselves before a richly colored portrait of Krishna and Radha. Two girls gently circled a silver plate in which camphor crystals were burning around the portrait. That means ladies were doing the aarti. The sounds of hymns filled the air. Perhaps I was the only one in that room whose attention was distracted by the firing of Diwali crackers down in the grounds below. The rest were in a trance, and for a moment I wished that I too were lost in that world of all-pervasive faith. There was no mistaking their sincerity. As the host said, these Americans put us to shame. They remind me of our rishis. When I called at the home the next morning, hoping to meet Bhaktivedanta Swami, I was greeted by a friendly member of the fraternity, 21-year-old Gopal Das, who had been Charles Paulin of Chicago before he shaved his head and took to dhoti and sandalwood paste and beads. I suppose you were at college, I said. No, Das said. I was a construction worker, doing shudra's work, you know. I was miserable. I felt wretched all of the time. Happiness eluded me. Then I met Swamiji. Lord Krishna has given me a new life. Das took me to his divine grace at once. I found him seated between a huge portrait of Krishna, a kindly old man with hypnotic eyes. It was a pity you had to go away yesterday, he said. Of course, I was busy, but then we are busy always chanting the names of the Lord. Swamiji pointed out that the Hare Krishna mantra is not to be taken for an ordinary song or anything associated with the mundane. It is a pure, transcendental sound vibration of the Absolute and has been upheld as such since time immemorial by the great sages and by the Vedic scriptures. Did not Lord Chaitanya pray to the Supreme, my dear Lord, you are so kind that you have invested all your power in the holy name? He explained that the chanting of the mantra purified the mind. That is why he has asked his followers to go to the public places and broadcast the Lord's names. The chanting, he said, takes place regularly in the streets of 20 cities in the USA, Canada, Britain, and West Germany. And soon the mantra will be heard in every town and village in the world. It is easy to describe the followers of Krishna consciousness variously as escapists, the victims of exotic lure, as hippie minus sex and drugs. It is quite possible that the movement will die out after a short blaze of glory. But what really impressed this writer was the fact that these young Americans were prepared to practice cheerfully the austerity implicit in the life of a sannyasi. The world of Lord Krishna may be a make-believe one, but this cannot be said of their dedication. The movement can be described as one of the more idealistic manifestations of modern youth disenchantment with present-day inadequacies. The Maha Mantra of Krishna's name may not help to forge a new world, but its magic appears to have brought a measure of joy to many young men and women. For Shyam Sundar, formerly Samuel Spirstra of Salem, Oregon, it has been the beginning of a meaningful living. "I want you to meet my wife and daughter," he said. "They are also Krishna's followers." He tapped on a door. "Malati, I have an Indian friend here." Previously, Melanie Nagel of Sacramento, California, Malati, that's me, was dressed in a plain white sari printed with tiny flowers. Her tilak of sandalwood paste, the way she covered her head with one end of the sari, the nose ring, and the black Maharashtrian bead necklace made me marvel at her adoption of Indian ways. Her quaintness had something almost Hindu about it. The Adhikaris, Sundars, Malatis, Mukundas of America, I am informed, are trying to establish Krishna communes all over the West. One has already sprung up in West Virginia. One has there on some 300 acres, the men, this is really a, in the past, 300 acres, the men tend the cows while their women churn the milk gopi fashion. The flute is the most popular musical instrument in the colony. There's a Rath Yatra once a year when Lord Jagannath is wheeled around. The great day is rounded off with a grand feast consisting of 15 courses of Indian vegetarian food, including full plates of prasadam. And the person who wrote this, his name was K.R. Sundar Rajan. This was again November 8th, 1970. And then there was wonderful pictures of the Harinam procession and of Gopal speaking with one sadhu during the Chopati Beach, myself, Shyam Sundar, and Saraswati, and then another devotee. So something a little historical and relating to this wonderful yatra here. And then there was actually one other article that came out around that time, and it's a little shorter, so I'll just go through it. Because it's interesting to see how we were perceived now and then, because at that point in time, it was basically, you know, the Westerners who were making the impact. We didn't have a following of, you know, of people from India at that point. So this author, he wrote, he goes, is it a stunt or an elaborate leg pull, meaning like a joke? The skeptics of the Krishna cult are legion. So in other words, people were always quite doubting, and you know, there was when we first came here, there was right away people that just embraced us like anything, and others who just, you know, had all kinds of negative things to say. They just couldn't believe it. And then of course at one point they made that movie, Dumb Maro Dumb. So whenever we did Harinam Sankirtan, or we were just walking, whenever they'd see us, instead of saying first Hare Krishna, they'd go Dum Maro Dum, Hare Krishna Hare Ram, you know. But Prabhupada said, never mind, at least they're saying Hare Krishna. So, and it was interesting. So this article writer, he's thinking, you know, is this a joke or what? He says, but watching the members of the cult at close quarters, following every movement of theirs and getting to know their philosophy and sentiments, one cannot but conclude that they are a very serious lot as ardent as the zealous adherents of any faith can be without incurring the charge of bigotry. A group of Americans, including a woman with baby in arms, began belonging to the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, has been moving around Bombay during the past few days, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, to the accompaniment of cymbals, castanets, and drums, mridangas. Curious onlookers congregate wherever the group goes. The shaven head, pigtails, sacred threads, and one-piece garments worn around the waist, and the loose ends tied behind the nape of the neck, the chest bared showing gopi or chandan nams, on which adorn the forearm and forehead, 12 marks in all, of the white male devotees, evoke in the spectator a sense of incredibility. Can the materialistic West, or at any rate a microscopic part of it, have turned at last to embrace the spiritualism of the East? I met several of the kirtan chanting Americans who have come here to attend the 7th All India Conference of the Bharat Sadhu Samaj, that's what they were referring to in the other article in Chopadi Beach, which began here today, and was at once struck by their sincerity and utter surrender to the cult they have adopted. The Vaishnavas of Mathura could not be so guileless, I thought, as this band of bhakti enthusiasts. Well, they have been held to ridicule at some centers, said a spokesman whom I asked the inevitable question, but so what? We shall not swerve from the path we have chosen, he added. He swore by his japa mala that the movement which is spearheaded by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who founded ISKCON in 1966, would not be allowed to backslide. There was over 1 million people serving the cause of the Chaitanya mission. Unlike the hippies, the ISKCON members are governed by a definite order and discipline to perform certain rituals and duties. They have their festivals and code of conduct, their hierarchy and administrators, and they study courses and examinations. The disciples eat only vegetarian food. By the act of offering nicely prepared foodstuff to the deities, the foodstuff take on all spiritual properties and are accepted as prasadam or divine remnants. So that was a quote, and they put the entire quote. The prasadam, however, is sumptuous, as many as 9 or 10 dishes. ISKCON has committed itself to cow protection. So that was another article, and it showed a very nice photo. Mostly it was Madhuri and Jamuna and myself in Saraswati out in a Harinam party. So that was, I just thought it was interesting. It's also historical how this movement came from India to America. When Srila Prabhupada left America, it was almost silent. Nobody took any note of it. None of us in this room, many of you were not even born, and the rest of us had no, knowledge of what was going to happen in our own lives shortly as a result of this elderly gentleman stepping on a freight ship and crossing the Atlantic. And then at a certain point in time, when Srila Prabhupada felt that he could actually make a statement in India, he came back with a group of us. And as soon as we landed, we were brought to the house on Marinelands Drive. We barely had time to just take a bath and eat anything, and then Prabhupada arrived and immediately ordered us out on the street. And we began that same day doing Harinam Sankirtan. And of course, he openly admitted he was using his white elephants as Westerners to it, because it was at that point in time very little tourist traffic in India. Just getting a plane from the West, maybe they only came 2 or 3 times a week. Now you have like dozens of planes daily coming in and out all over India, but in those days, just very few planes per week landed here. And the few Westerners that came were maybe for some kind of business. So definitely, attraction was noticed. And because we were dressed as Vaishnavs and were performing Harinam, It was very, as you can tell by the article, very astounding. And in this way, attention was given to Prabhupada, more so than if he had himself, because, you know, India had so many sadhus. So even Prabhupada had that experience prior to leaving India that he was trying to start something. He went to Jhansi, he tried to start League of Devotees. He was preaching here and there, but he couldn't get the fire to light. It wasn't happening in the way that he, you know, people came. There was obviously people would listen to him, but he had a larger vision. So he took the order of his spiritual master in a very serious way by going to America. And he chose specifically America at that time because at that point in time, America was really the beacon. You know, every foreign country, including European countries, would look towards America because it was kind of in its, like, materialistic heyday. And so, as it says, whatever the great man does, the more common men will follow. So Prabhupada told us, he said, I thought if I had some success in America, then I could go anywhere because I could point, well, you know, point to that. Well, in America, they are doing. And then people would, you know, oh, okay. So in this way, he was very wisely using, you know, a strategic marketing technique, at the same time filling the instructions of his spiritual master. So when we came back here, of course, people would look at us, and we would point them immediately to Srila Prabhupada. And, of course, they were amazed because even though there were, as I said, so many sadhus in India, none of them had really could claim any success as far as spreading the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or even quote-unquote Hinduism. You know, the people would come and politely listen to a lecture or two and then they would leave. But none of us wanted to leave Srila Prabhupada. No. So those were two little historical articles about early day of ISKCON here in Bombay, and in particular early days here in where kind of like the little fire for Chaupati was ignited. It was actually very wonderful, that particular occasion, because when we started to chant, first of all, they didn't expect that. What they expected, that because all these other sadhus had gotten up and spoke their impersonalism, and Prabhupada didn't, you know, you could see that he didn't appreciate it. But how are you going to get this crowd of people to, like, really listen? So when they called him, he told us to get to chant, and we had all been sitting either on the stage around behind Prabhupada are up in the front part. So when he told us to chant, everybody just jumped up immediately, some on the stage, and just some of us stayed within the audience and started to chant in the audience. And the audience, even though they had been very restless, as was described, they actually wanted to leave because now it was getting a little wet, damp, you know. All of a sudden, by this, you know, it was a spectacle for them to see these Western devotees chanting, and Hansa Dudu was a very great kirtanier. He was, you know, playing mridanga and chanting very expertly. Everybody dancing and twirling, and then just entering into the audience, and people were mesmerized. They forgot about leaving, and they just started to enter into the Sankirtan mood and were joining with us. So India has always been described as, you know, a poor country. I like the fact in the one article that Gurudas said, how can this be a poor country? It's the land of Lord Krishna's birth. And we're seeing now that somehow or other, the real wealth of India, which is its spiritual inheritance, is being eclipsed by this so-called material prosperity that's coming. Last night, I was in Govinda's, and about maybe, you know, 15 to 20 very well-dressed and mannered and cultured young people. It was from Austria and Germany. Nartaki, those people were from Austria? Those people that came in last night? Yeah, from Germany. Some of them were from Austria also. But they had their professor. They were all dressed nicely, you know, suits, ties, young people. Professor was like middle-aged fellow. So they came in, and Nartaki could speak their language, so she was speaking to them. So what were they here for? They, of course, they were at Govinda's for prasadam, but what were they in India for? They were going on a pilgrimage of the Indian stock exchange and the brokerage houses and the banks. So, fortunately, this was their first day, so I was thinking, fortunately, their first meal, it was their first meal, they came to Govinda's. So, of course, they had nice Hare Krishna kirtan in the background. I was hoping that, well, once they get sick of the brokerage houses and the stock exchange and the banks, hope they remember that you know, this other aspect, and you know, maybe they'll reconsider why they really came to India. I remember when Bishakha first came, she arrived in Bombay, so her name was Jean at the time, and we were at the Akash Ganga building. And she and her husband, John, who was later Yadubar, they were photographers, and he'd arrived first, and she came over. I asked her, "Oh, why have you come to India?" And she goes, "I have come to photograph the essence of India." She said it very seriously. You know, Bishakha, she's a very serious person. So I looked around our little temple room there with Radharasa Bihari and their little wooden altar, and I said, "You have come to the right place." You know, of course, she was thinking in, you know, in other terms of that, but very shortly she realized that she had definitely come to the, not so much the right place, but the right group of people. And she definitely photographed the essence of India by documenting the activities of Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, so much material prosperity is coming up in India. I was on the way down to class, there was one newspaper lying there, and it said a record price had been paid for 1 square foot of land here in Bombay. I don't know the meaning of it. It was like 46 lakhs of rupees for 1 square foot of land somewhere in Bombay. So I'm just like, you know, who has 1 lakh of rupee, what to speak of 46 lakhs to pay for 1 square foot of land? And if you're going to build a building, obviously you need more than 1 square foot. So I guess it was a pretty expensive deal, you know, and good luck. But hopefully, just like in America, when we were at the peak of all our wealth and everything was like just shining on us, you know, so now people are catching the attention of India. Even in a West Virginia newspaper, I read an article about how the new prosperity of India, and people are going to India to learn about this or that. You know, and there was a photograph of some Indian business person, and that somebody from business band from West Virginia had gone to India to learn about something. So, you know, as your prosperity, your material prosperity increases, inevitably there's going to be the downside where the material satisfaction also decreases, even though you're getting that, you know, immense wealth. And I'm seeing it, like, now they have these big flashing, you know, electronic billboards. You see them all around Bombay. So many, like, 2,000 plus drivers arrested for drunk driving, and so many people arrested for drugs. You know, they're talking about drugs now. I mean, who was talking about, no, you know, they didn't even talk about drugs when I first came, and now it's a big problem. So big, you know, it says, using drugs will take you to the gate of the law. You know, so if they're having that on a big billboard, it means there's a drug problem too. It means people are getting, you know, materially their objects. They're getting their houses, their big cars, and their whatever, but they're not getting that inner satisfaction. They're not finding that their peace. So they're looking to the other circumstances, just like we did, drugs, alcohol, this, that, and the other thing. And ultimately, we had to look for spiritual life, because even the intoxications, which momentarily deranged our minds into thinking we were blissful for, you know, a couple of seconds, then you'd crash down and you'd feel worse than ever. So the same experience will be repeating itself here. So hopefully you're on the watch for this, and when these people start finding themselves, you know, too much crazy and too much anxiety, you know, they've got their wealth, but what next? You can be there and you can say, here's what's next, and you have your wonderful Christmas marathon. Take Bhagavad Gita. I heard you have a, what is it, 1 lakh? Is that right? You have a big quota this year. So wonderful. I hope that it's doubled. I heard the motto is one book a day for every member. So knowing that you have an enormous congregation, that's quite impressive. And I hope that Krishna fulfills that desire in a wonderful way. And that somehow or other, once again, India can, you know, it can have its material success, no problem, but its real success is that this is the home of Lord Krishna, and the spiritual knowledge and the instrumental spiritual knowledge, this is the home of the Sankirtan movement. Lord Chaitanya, you know, said, it's not a prediction, he said, my name will be chanted around the entire world, every town and village, and basically Prabhupada fulfilled that. So it doesn't mean now we stop, but now we have to go, you know, so the every town and village, so every door, every home in every town and village, you know, Bombay's a big village, so got a lot of doors to knock on. I wish you all success in your wonderful Christmas marathon of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and maybe in the future we'll see more wonderful articles like this proclaiming the glories of the Sankirtan movement. So, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.